Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me.
Yes, well, I'm here. Mike Cosentino was over here, but we're feeling Hillary today. We're feeling very Hillary, and
then Gary LeMaster.
Good morning.
We're going to talk about, I guess, how would you phrase it? It's the attacks on Hillary Clinton. There's a long history of some legitimate criticism, of course, but of illegitimate criticism. And it goes all the way back to the Clinton administration, which I guess ended in 1999.
It actually goes back to Arkansas in 1989.
Yeah. So there's been a history of attacks, and the Republican nominee, we think, Donald Trump, has been using a lot of ammunition back from 20, 25, 30 years ago, all kinds of rumors and stories to attack Hillary Clinton. I think because there's not really much legitimate to attack her for now. You see, there's the email. The Benghazi attacks have been more or less exposed as a Republican operation to lower her positive.
Not at the coffee shop. They still believe that's the reason she should be put in jail.
There's this whole fantasy that she'll be indicted before the election, and we'll actually see her taken away in handcuffs.
I admire us for talking about the next president here. And but what I'm afraid of is that right here on Democratic Perspective, the show that prides itself on presenting the reasonable position, is going to take every unreasonable, stupid thing that's been said about Hillary Clinton, and by the way, has been said about every successful woman in America, I like to believe. I do believe. So that's what makes this so hard, is that any woman that has the audacity to think that she has a right to some sort of leadership in this country is beaten down. And in this case, the Clintons, as a family, the three of them, have been vilified every chance. No matter, they set up the Clinton Foundation, has done more good in the world than many other things, and yet the right wing finds ways to say, well, they take money from Muslims. Well, of course they take money from Muslim countries.
They take money from everybody.
That's how you do good in the world. And yet that's all. So this is a quagmire. This is a spider web.
All of this is going to come up because Donald Trump is the presumed nominee of the Republican Party, and Donald Trump is all about attack, and I call it attack and deny, attack and quote others, attack and deny, and then shift the ground of the same attack. We were talking about the show before the show. Something happens when a Democrat gets elected to the presidency, and it happened back in the Clinton administration. It happened in the Obama administration. There is this feeling of entitlement by the very, very wealthy folks who fund the Republican Party, and they've always had it. So when a Democrat gets in office, whether it was Roosevelt or Truman or Clinton, there's this fury, or Jimmy Carter, there are these vicious attacks which you end up in the newspapers. It's a sense of ownership of the American government. We control the powers, we control the economics of the United States, and somebody's interfering with it by electing some Democrat.
You always hear about the liberal agenda whenever there's a Democrat in, but you know, they have their own agenda, of course, and that's perfectly okay to use whatever means possible to put forward their own agenda. But as soon as it's a Democrat, then it's something evil.
And the attacks, the most vicious attacks, come not from the people who own huge chunks of America, but from people who like to identify with owning huge chunks of America, who are sort of their, I don't want to use, you know, the slave master analogy, but these are basically the people who enforce the rules and stuff. They get infuriated. And when Clinton was elected to the presidency, and as Gary said before that, even in Arkansas, a whole lot of these people came out of the work. In fact, there's been an anti-Hillary small business, I guess multi-million dollar business for decades, right, Gary?
Well, it began in the late 80s when Bill Clinton was governor of Arkansas, and he was seen as a rising star in the party. Of course, the Republicans saw that too. Lee Atwater, who was the chairman of the RNC at the time, was fearful that George H.W. Bush would not be reelected in 92. And so he looked around at the landscape and saw that the biggest threat was from a moderate Southern president or a Democratic candidate, and identified Bill as being the biggest threat to Bush's reelection.
Yeah, I mean, whether you like Bill Clinton or not, or his legacy, he's an extraordinarily talented politician. Mm-hmm. And even Kenneth Starr has been talking about, who prosecuted tried to prosecute the Whitewater thing and stuff, has praised the Clinton Foundation and said that Bill Clinton is a really emphatic guy. He does feel it. He's not a phony. And it helped get him elected, right? And they saw the danger very early in a crowded Democratic field, that he was the most charismatic of the candidates.
Well, and Atwater was known as the guy who created the campaign tactic of using social issues to divide the country. That's his legacy to politics.
And the other one is using the candidate's strength against him. So you saw when Kerry was running for president, here's a genuine war hero with all these medals who engaged extremely dangerous things in Vietnam compared to what a lot of other people did, attacked for being not really a war hero.
Yeah, they turned a war hero into, they swift-boated him is the
term. Swift-boated him. And what they're going to do for Hillary, I think, as a fundamental, is they're going to use her experience. And Gary and I were talking about before the show, she was a senator, for example, from 2001 to 2009. That's 8 years in the Senate. And she was the Secretary of State from 2009 to 2013. Sorry, I was looking at my notes, folks. So she has a tremendous amount of experience, and they're going to use that against her, right? Right, Mike?
Starting with the Secretary of State stuff, she is a cautious internationalist, according to the New York Times. Patrick Healy in the New York Times front page, I think it was Sunday, he just said, she's a cautious internationalist. She makes Donald Trump look like a schoolboy when it comes to the international stage,
a bully schoolboy,
world politics, and she's so well informed, she's so well respected, she's so.
But people like the fact that Trump doesn't know the facts, right, Mike? I mean,
well,
they like that.
I'm not even addressing that. You and what's his name over here can talk about that. I'm going to talk about Hillary Clinton, the woman, and the fine president that she's going to be, and somebody that the nation could be proud of, and somebody that will guide us in a reasonable way to reasonable things, balancing domestic needs and international activities throughout the world.
You were a Bernie supporter too, right, Mike?
Oh, God, don't get me started. I heard Bernie on he went on C-SPAN last night, had this extremely, if you can catch it, and you could hear the respect in the interviewer's voice. And he finished by saying, you know, Senator Sanders, you can come on this show anytime. This was a real human being. And this is one of the differences, if we want to start with the Democratic. And don't forget, the Democrats have attacked Hillary not nearly as viciously nor as long as the Republicans. But Bernie Sanders was on TV last night on C-SPAN and just talked about everything and talked about Clinton.
Let's be honest, though, Mike. 30 years of attacks on Hillary Clinton, personal and political, have made her very guarded. And her appearances are guarded. She's very careful what she says, because I know there are people tracking her all the time.
I just want to finish. We missed a chance. We're missing a chance at a really, really great president. Somebody that that made sense. Somebody that talked in normal tones with and talked about normal things that people could understand, talked about things that people care about, talked about job, talked about health care being a human right. I mean, these are not small things. You know, we get up, even on this show, we get off on all these highfalutin things and all these things behind the issues and all that. But shit, give them some jobs, give them some health care. You know what I'm saying? Give them some respect. And this is worldwide, and all the problems get better. But Hillary Clinton, I want to talk about her real quickly now in relation.
She won the primary.
She had more in common with the people who wanted to stay in the European Union than the as far as I'm concerned, we're exporting a Trump poison overseas. So certainly David Cameron and Hillary Clinton were cut from the same cloth. This is the pragmatic way. This is how you move forward. And you know, maybe they're right. Maybe Bernie wouldn't have been the best choice. I was just talking about this real human being that would have made a great president that I heard on C-SPAN last night. But there's more than one person that will make a great president. And Madam President sounds pretty good in 2016, especially with someone so incredibly qualified and who is a pragmatic. You want somebody at the helm who is a pragmatic, cautionary person, and that's Hillary Clinton.
But as a campaigner, she's not a great campaigner, right? She's not great.
Let's be clear. She won the nomination. Contrary to, I was a Bernie supporter initially too. The nomination was not stolen from Bernie Sanders. Clinton won it, and so be it. She's our candidate. I think she's a great candidate. She's the only thing that anyone really has against her is the 30-year, right-wing attack, personal attacks on her and her husband. And she is the most qualified presidential candidate, perhaps in our history.
Well, that's what I say. I mean, the resource material has been so poisoned by the right for 30 years, as you've been saying, there are so many lies. There are so many fake stories. There are so many half-truths in any time you attempt to research Hillary. You have to be very, very careful of your source. You have to be very, very careful.
Here's how the process
Where you go for information.
You have an industry of looking for negative information about the Clintons. It's been around for a long time. It shifted its
focus.
And
if they don't have, they
Bill
make it up. That's
to,
the key.
To Hillary. Well, that's true. But what they do is they look for anybody who will say anything bad about her. And they promoted nowadays on websites. Originally, there was none of this. I mean, you got to remember when Bill Clinton was president. I mean, the internet was still in its infancy. And I think the thing is that there's an industry. So they come up with a story. They get somebody to say something negative, and then they publicize it and they try to get it into the mainstream media. And Gary, you have a case in point about Whitewater. And there was an initial investigation that said there was nothing there, but the press picked it up and turned it into an issue, even though Well, millions of dollars later, there's no indictments, and they were basically cleared.
The shorthand is that, as I mentioned, Lee Atwater was out to discredit Clinton, and there was a conservative group in Arkansas called the Arkansas Project that dug up the Whitewater investment. And Whitewater was an investment about $200,000. From the Clintons and a couple that were friends of theirs, or at least investment partners. And they lost money on the investment, yet the people in Arkansas, blew it up. The right-wingers blew it up. And by the way, their motivation was that Clinton was a post-racial candidate. He embraced, racial equality. That did not sit well with the conservatives in Arkansas. And so they blew this up into being this fraudulent, attempt to steal money.
They made enough. They got it into the Republican mainstream, and they raised enough.
Thanks to a reporter for the New York Times.
That when they spent years and years of investigations, it went
70,
nowhere.
70 plus million dollars were spent to investigate Whitewater. That spun off into a variety of other.
Let's talk about that, Gary. The investigations always start this way. Rumors that are politically motivated, they get pushed into the mainstream media if possible. You have an investigation that over and over again, the investigations of Clinton always turn up nothing, but you have. Then that spins off more investigations. And so finally, Kenneth Starr went through Whitewater was nothing. That disappeared. He spent millions of bucks on it, and there was nothing there. But there was nothing there to the supposed murder of Vince Foster and all the sort of nonsense that we listen to, folks. If you're younger, you won't even remember this stuff. But you're going to hear it again from Donald Trump because all the lies of the 90s are coming back. I mean, like, there's like the eternal return with the Donald of every lie he can possibly think of.
Once they got started, they named Kenneth Starr the special prosecutor. And Ken Starr, by the way, just was forced to resign as the president of Baylor in a scandal of sexual assaults that were covered up on campus. So this guy has no moral high ground. Anyway, once they started the investigation with him as a special prosecutor, they spent, like I mentioned, more than $70 million in what amounted to a fishing expedition. It included Travelgate, which was a made-up scandal because the White House had fired seven employees from the White House travel office, which was entirely the administration's prerogative. It then went into an investigation about Vince Foster, Fostergate, which was a deputy White House counsel for the Clinton administration who committed suicide.
Left a suicide note.
It was clear it was a suicide. There was never any question.
See, I think
except in political circles.
When you look at the obvious thing, you see a guy who has the gun, he shoots himself, and he leaves a suicide note. How do you turn that into a scandal and to a murder that they murdered? In fact, there's some crazy group that has a list of all the people associated with Clinton that have died. I mean, there's no end to this, Gary. There's absolutely no end to it. And there's no level of honesty that I can perceive in some of this stuff. Now, I'm not saying they're not legitimately, there's legitimate criticism of Hillary Clinton's policy, and you can criticize her ability, her carefulness. I mean, she's changed over the years. She's gotten more and more careful after all of these attacks.
Well, that's
I don't know what you can do, Mike.
That's the key, Steve. Is the lies? I mean, the Benghazi going back to that still resonates down at the coffee shop.
That's another $14 million investigation and climbing to find nothing.
Exactly. If you get into the fine details of Benghazi, which the coffee shop does, and you get to the stand down order,
that one of the lieutenants received, and therefore, because he got the stand down order, didn't go to save the CIA personnel that ended up getting killed.
I think that was made on the spot.
I'm just saying the lie was repeated 85 times on Fox News.
Yes.
The truth that
came out
during the hearing. It was not similarly repeated.
The leader of the squad wanted more information before he went off to protect the CIA than the guys who were working on the squad. Who's right? Who's wrong? This is really, really detailed stuff that obviously Secretary of State is going to have no clue about. President's not even going to know about. These decisions are made by the protective personnel of the State Department. And in working with other agencies, there just isn't any there. But that hasn't stopped them. I mean, it goes on and on and on. We've had shows about the Benghazi nonsense over and over again. And I think what it is like, why does this happen? It happens because there's political motivation. Like, why is Whitewater a big deal? It was never, even if they were guilty of, I don't know what they would be guilty of, but even if they were guilty of something, it was not it's not a big deal. Why does it keep getting blown up? Well, the answer is politics and the politics of personal destruction. In Bill Clinton, they had a very charismatic figure who could relate to all kinds of people, conservative and liberal and moderate. And they had to get him one way or the other, and they couldn't get him for his politics because he's kind of better at doing politics than they were. So they went after Hillary. They didn't like the idea, as Mike mentioned, of a strong woman. When Bill said, it's a two for one, you're getting both of us and we're both going to do things. And Hillary became very active in health care. That infuriated the right wing who didn't want to see a strong woman doing anything and didn't want the idea that the two of them were going to work together to govern the country. Even if it was just a rhetorical thing that happened and, happened as Bill was just going on, that became a major issue for him because he didn't like that. He didn't like that. He didn't like the fact that President Obama was black. He didn't like that. That's not them. That's not the way they do things, and they don't like it.
All of this has led to, now we have Emailgate. With the we've talked about before, that she, like her two predecessors before her, used a personal email server for all of her emails. Unlike her predecessors, she saved the emails, turned over more than 55,000 emails. By the way, the Bush administration tried to bury more than 2 million emails that they had routed through the server at the Republican National Committee's office, and it took a FOIA request in 2 or 3 years to get what few emails were left.
This is a lot, you think, politics. I mean, she is Secretary of State, so she actually has the right to declare things secret or not secret. I mean, when she's in office, it's a lot. And there's a bureaucratic process, but she's running things. And so how does that impact the whole thing?
So they've strung this out for more than 2 years. They've strung Benghazi out since 2012, so nearly 4 years. And with the knowledge and the understanding and intent of discrediting the presumptive Democratic presidential candidate, they had 4 years to plan this.
I guess that sort of sums up what we were saying earlier.
Drip, drip, drip. There'll be some supposed revelations as we get closer to the election. And what they've done is create a credibility problem for Hillary. And to address that, I'd like to point out that PolitiFact and other fact-checking organizations have, rated her statements, during the Democratic primaries, and they've rated all of the candidates, including the Republicans, through the primaries. They found that more than half of Hillary's statements were true or mostly true, yet only 9%, single digits of Trump statements were rated true or mostly true.
You know, we use
and 61% of Trump statements have been rated false or pants on fire false.
We talk about PolitiFact a lot, and we talk about the problem of lies in the media and the problem of research, and so take those things to heart, folks. These organizations, these fact-checking organizations. Now, there are some out there that are on the other side's payroll, and there are some out there that are on our side's payroll. So you have to be still careful. But
and even the ones who are not on anybody's payroll, trying to do an objective job, make mistakes.
But at least
it's not like they're perfect, but they're here, right, because of what happened with the invasion of Iraq by George Bush, and when the press filtered all these phony charges directly into the public sphere with uncritically. So now it's built up, so they do check things, right?
PolitiFact was in fact started, generated by the St. Petersburg Times, which is a Republican-leaning newspaper. FactCheck.org is completely nonpartisan, and those two are exceedingly reliable.
And that was my point, was to go to these organizations. I got off saying there are other organizations that you can't trust. But if you hear it on Democratic perspective, and we use them a lot, then trust them. Go to them. Don't trust your source. I don't care what it is. Don't trust it.
If your source is right-wing radio or Fox News, you can basically just discount it.
You can do trust but verify, I guess, if you really like looking at the news commentator. I don't know who's left anymore. You can't say Brian Williams and Diane Sawyer. I like to look at Diane Sawyer, but I still verify what she says.
I think the problem is there's going to be a blizzard of hate Hillary stuff, because they have a candidate who's the best prepared candidate in history, who has a long record. So of course, if you have a long public record and you have a long record of calling the shots and making decisions hard and easy, you're gonna make mistakes. So if you take the Libya situation, she advocated the American support for other campaigns to get rid of Gaddafi. It worked beautifully. It worked just like it was supposed to. No American casualties, cost us almost nothing. Gaddafi dies, but then we get the same kind of result that you see in this developing in Syria, but also in Iraq, which is chaos after the dictator goes. So on the one hand, she was right. On the other hand, she was wrong, maybe, but it still hasn't played out. The Libyan government is now on its way, or apparently, I'm not going to say that, had a series of defeats of the Islamic State in Libya. So we don't know how things are going to actually turn out. But she's made political mistakes. She's made intellectual mistakes. She said things that were wrong on occasion. But she's been in politics for God knows how long.
Everyone was wrong on Libya. All of the Middle East experts were wrong on Libya. The right wing was wrong on Libya. The right wing was the seminal moment in the Middle East that has created chaos was the invasion of Iraq. And in the failure in the attempt to democratize it, forcing our political system onto Iraq, that was a seminal moment. Everything else has been
the interviewer last night on C-SPAN asked Bernie Sanders, how long will the Americans' invasion of Iraq hurt us? And he said, forever.
It's viewed in the Middle East, in case you're not familiar.
And he's right.
It's viewed by the people of the Middle East as an attack on Islam. It wasn't viewed as an attack on Saddam Hussein.
That's right.
It was viewed as an attack on Islam, and the resulting chaos only, with the IEDs, et cetera, supported their view that.
But 7 years now, Obama's been trying to get out of both Iraq and Afghanistan, and we're just stuck there. I mean, if unless you really want, say, the Afghanistani government that we propped up and created and invented to collapse, then there has to be American troops there. If you, you know, if you when you tried to get out of Iraq, then that's the surge basically drove the Al-Qaeda underground, and then it reemerged as the Islamic State. So it's just, I think what these guys are saying is just sort of endless chaos and new permeations of problems, because we fundamentally were trying to punch above our grade. We were trying to do something that we couldn't do. And we need to be more realistic, I think, about what the United States can do and not do. Nobody's saying we don't do anything in international affairs. But we have to be realistic about punching above our weight, trying to create new governments in countries that without understanding them. We did it in Vietnam. We had no clue who the Vietnamese were. We just went in there and started shooting people. And, you know, we didn't understand, who the North Vietnamese were, or who was considered patriots, who was considered. We didn't know anything. You couldn't even, back in those days, guys, folks, you couldn't even find any books about Vietnam. There were like two or three authors that had even been there. And we still went in and lost 50,000 guys. And that process has not really, it's been modified, but it hasn't really changed in all these years.
The neocons, effort with Iraq by taking out Saddam Hussein, their purpose was to create a democratic island in the Middle East, an outpost where we could control the oil. Ever since then, we've been doing, trying to limit the damage. And I think you could look at the foreign policy of the Obama administration as focused on trying not to make any more mistakes in the Middle East, any another Iraq. We've been trying to find peace in the Middle East. That was the initiative with talking with Iran and trying to end their nuclear capability, which was successful. We don't need more enemies in that part of the world. Let me ask you guys this.
There's going to be this absolute blizzard of rise of lies about Hillary Clinton, about her policies, about her character.
Oh,
are we
going
to be able to see who she is in the middle of all this? Mike, you think?
Yeah.
Can we see who she is and what she's done? Or is there going to ever be an honest discussion of her flaws and virtues?
Part of that is up to Hillary. I'm going to compare Hillary to the rest of the Democratic Party, which has a messaging problem of significant proportions. She lets so much go unanswered. But then again, there's so much out there, I guess. So your question, to answer your question, will we be able to see the truth? Part of it is up to Hillary. There are Democrats who don't dawdle when they see, they have people that work for them. They have staff members. Clinton has the largest staff of any candidate ever. When they see lies, they need to answer them, and I don't care how small it is. I don't care if it's in my coffee talker. I don't care down at the coffee shop. And I don't care if it's on NBC.
But Mike,
they need to at least release something and say, no, that's not the story.
But isn't that the tactic, Mike? You come up with some lie, you make it. The candidate responds to it. It gets more publicity. You go back and say, well, yeah, it really is, but it's a little bit different than I said. It's even worse. And then it goes back and forth. And that's the challenge, right?
Well, yes. And that's fine. If Fox News and the other liars want to, Fox Television News, wants to spend their days fighting with the Clinton staff about items of untruth that they'll eventually lose, then that's fine.
But that's what they're paid to do, Mike.
No. Their advertisers, their supporters will eventually say, hey, you know what? I don't want to be advertising my dishwashing product when your guys are arguing the same point over and over and over again. You have, you know, the other side prevents their, presents their facts, and you present your allegations, and it goes back and forth. No, I think there is a limit to that. It must be responded to. It can't be ignored because all it does is fester.
I'd like to address an article I found. I can't find the author of it. I wish I could. I know he's a Republican, a male Republican, who wrote a piece called "Thinking About Hillary: A Plea for Reason," and he puts together a chart that shows that over a period of time that Hillary's been involved in politics. Every time there's a political campaign, and he labels it because she's a woman, her unfavorables go up. Whenever she's been in office or been in in the Senate or in the State Department, her unfavorables go down and her favorables go up. And the conclusion he reaches...
You don't think this is an accident, Gary?
No. The conclusion he reaches is that this is strictly because she's a woman running for a powerful office. And that whenever she tries to run for office, they try to pull out all of these negative things about her and try to tear her down, and that increases her unfavorables. But when she actually is in office, she is well-liked. She was a well-liked senator in New York.
Yeah, she was one of the best senators when she was a senator. She was extremely popular in New York. Worked across the aisle. She did all that. But that doesn't seem to matter.
She was too good at working across the aisle for some of us.
Yes, and I'm not a big fan of her foreign policy, I must say. So it's not that, I think that any of us agree completely.
She wouldn't have invaded Iraq.
You have to.
Even though she voted.
You have to put that vote into context. She was a senator for New York in 2001. She was asked to vote to give Bush the power to intervene in Iraq if he chose to. It wasn't a vote for an invasion of Iraq.
Good point.
It was a vote to give him the authority to do it if necessary.
He was obvious. I have to disagree. It was obvious he was going to invade Iraq. I mean, I watched this whole process. We had the attack. We had the response in Afghanistan. And then we started seeing the leaks from the neocons and all the people about Iraq. We saw all the phony stories about how Iraq and Al-Qaeda were big buddies when they were mortal enemies. You know, it just went on and on, and we ended up going in Iraq. So people knew that that vote was going to lead to an Iraq invasion. And I tell you, my heart sank when I realized that they were going to invade Iraq over the World Trade Center attack. I thought, they really can't do that. They're really not going to invade this country. They had nothing to do with it by claiming they had something to do with it. They really won't do that. They're not that unscrupulous. But they were.
But even if you believe that this was preordained, and I there's a lot of evidence to suggest that she was a senator of New York that had just been attacked, and if she had not voted to give authorization to the administration, it probably would have been a highly unpopular vote amongst her constituents. But that be as it may, she wasn't alone. There were most of the people in the Senate at the time voted to authorize the
an exception, for example, in Bernie Sanders.
He was one of the rare exceptions.
Now, I think what we're talking about here really, folks, is that she's been in public life a long time. And if you want to see her strengths and weaknesses, you can try to find them out objectively. So we could go back and forth on her politics for a long time because she has a long political history. She's going to be running against a guy who makes up stuff as he goes. Any kind of conspiracy theory that he comes across on the internet, anything that he thinks will help him, particularly personal attacks. And he has a few, which we should talk about sometime, basic strategies for attacking people. And it's not just a purely Trump thing. This is the standard duplicitous attack things. You attack and then you deny. Well, no. Oh, here's the, take the one with Muslims. I'm going to ban all Muslims from coming country. No, maybe I won't. And then, yeah, I am. And then, well, I'm only going to ban them from certain countries. I mean, it goes back and forth. It's a deliberate, deceptive process.
Let's talk about the next president of the United States, Hillary Clinton, and what her positions are likely to be, at least on some things anyway. One of the things that makes my heart sore is that she is in, according to Bernie Sanders, daily negotiations with him and his staff. Their staffs are in daily negotiations over what I consider humanizing the Clinton administration. On all of those issues I've already mentioned, but I will happily mention again. In other words, and I don't want to use the word moving Hillary left. I want to use the word making Hillary more of a Democrat, making her more reasonable, making her more clearly on the side of the people. 1.5 million people turned out to Bernie Sanders' rallies. 1.5 million people did not turn out to Hillary Clinton's rallies. She won the nomination, yes, sir. But if it came down to a knife fight, like I like to say very often, Sanders would win because he had the supporters in the.
It's not a knife fight, Mike. It's an election.
Well, maybe that's too bad. But the point is that the Sanders and Hillary's people are in negotiations daily on things like jobs.
So you think her policies because. For Mike and Gary and I, some of Hillary's policies are extremely conservative. I will say this about Hillary Clinton. I don't think there's ever been a candidate in American history who has had more detailed descriptions of what she's going to do. I mean, she's laid out plans in excruciating detail, so excruciating detail that nobody reads them.
Well, this is a really simple rule. Wall Street doesn't like uncertainty, so she learned that. And so she provides certainty.
Wall Street's not going to like her plan for Wall Street.
Let's put this into perspective in this way.
So far.
And Hillary has exceedingly detailed policy, proposals. Trump has, glossed over things in broad sweeping terms with no detail. The few details that he has put forward, according to economists that just did a study on it, would cost the United States, raise the U.S. debt $1.6 trillion over the next decade, where poor Hillary's would not.
I've seen the analysis, but I think the thing, Gary, is that Trump's just winging it. He's saying day to day whatever he thinks is going to be popular. If he gets attacked for too much, so he attacks the judge who's born in Indiana, who's trying a case. He attacks the judge. He doubles down, attacks the judge more for being Mexican, for being Latino heritage. He does this over and over again, and now he kind of backed off. Said, "Well, I didn't mean all that stuff." But that's what the guy does.
Yeah, there's nothing to like.
Chris Hayes nailed it. That he just wants to dominate the news cycle.
Yeah,
and he knows when they come, and that's what he believes is the road to success. And maybe he's no, I don't think he's right, but certainly he strategy resonates with a lot of Americans.
It worked in the Republican primary.
But we are sponsored in part by Democrats of the Red Rocks, and we have the third Sunday, 6 p.m. July 17th. We're having a door meetup at the office. 2855 West State Route 89A, third Sunday, 6 p.m., July 17th. Come on down to the Democrats of the Red Rocks office and help us out. We got something going on July 21st.
That's the door breakfast?
Ah, the door breakfast. Yeah, we're going to talk about
it. Dora's continuing their breakfast all through the summer.
A living wage. Our speaker is going to be talking about a living wage.
And if you can't make the meeting,
Thomas Robles.
Very good.
We'll try to get him on the show.
We'll get him on the show.
Well, it's time to wrap things up, I guess, Mike.
Well, let's go to VVID.org and listen to the podcast.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.